Welcome to the Ohana Life Podcast, where we bring to you interviews with people who can help in this challenging world. In this episode, I bring to you Michelle Sangara of Canada. She's an educational architect. She had helped me with the Ohana Yoga training program, where we just made it more tight and clean and crisp and clear for the students. She uncovers these three pillars of a good educational framework, and I'm just so happy with what she has to offer us and you today. I hope you get so much out of this. She thinks locally and acts globally, and I think that's a huge, important role to have when we're in a world right now where jobs and schools are all online. So grab a pen, grab a notebook, write down what you think, and let us know how you did. Bye-bye.
Hi, Michelle.
Hi, Lisa.
How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. For a girl in quarantine, you know, just arriving from an international flight, I am sipping a cup of coffee and working from home, which is what I would normally be doing anyway. So not too bad. At this end of Ontario.
And you were working in Australia as well, correct?
I was, yes.
The whole time? Mm.
Mm-hmm. Yes, working on a 12-hour, some Canadian clients. There are some people I work with in Australia, in Western Australia specifically, but this working with Canadian and American clients on a 12-hour time difference for a few months, you know, just because it was safer to wait it out there. I was meant to come home earlier, but then it was kind of safer to wait it out there. Which was great because we were like, there's like so few people over there, Lisa. I was going to the ocean, going for swims. It was wonderful.
Oh, I love that. Yeah. We did get to talk while you were over there, which was really nice. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
so I know you because I originally took a training with you. It was a month long and I loved it. And so then I guess enlisted you to help me with the studio. Because I think the unit was on like how to kind of more define your business, right? What did you call it?
Yeah, it was the business of wellness. So through Yoga Detour, which is the organization that I was working for that you were purchasing the programs from, we were working together, Cecily Milne, the director of Yoga Detour, and I were working, and we were like, you know, we're both big yoga fans, obviously, and wellness fans, and we noticed that there was a really big gap in the market for people who had this really good stuff that they wanted to share, but not necessarily the business acumen or strategies to bring it to market. And both of us, her and myself, were self-made entrepreneurs and didn't go to business school, but both had very business-savvy families that had entrepreneurs in our families. So we looked at business not as a degree that you took, but just as a set, you know, a way of thinking and a certain set of strategies that you apply and implement. So we put together a little business of wellness training through Yoga Detour so that people like yourself who were running a wellness programs or centers or trainings or wanted to do that, but never really had the confidence to venture into the quote unquote business of it all. People make it sound so intimidating, could get some basic tools on how to start doing that. Yeah, that's the M3, the mentorship program. So I'm starting that July 1st again. Yeah, this year I start that. It's a different program. But are you in it this year too?
I'm in it this year too.
Oh, amazing. Good, because this one's all about education. Yeah, good.
Yeah, so then and I was just starting the yoga training and kind of wanted to enlist you to say, hey, like, is there a way that I could not streamline it, but was I in the right ball league? Was everything kind of going the way it should? And you sort of helped me tie together some pieces. And it really was just those anchor questions for me that really helped tie together the entire 10 months of the program. But I thought, man, this woman is a genius. And of course you are very intelligent. And I will ask you to tell people about yourself in a minute. But then we hired you for this other business here in town, a nursing business where you helped us kind of scale. And I think that was what, maybe five sessions? or so, something like that. And again, super helpful. So I sort of waited an entire year until this training was almost done and kind of said, okay, here's a check back point of what can I improve? And we just met recently for that too. And I thought, let's do a podcast.
Let's do it. We love talking. We love chatting.
We do. And so I was so glad that you're on board for this. So let's tell people, what is it that you do?
Sure. So it is, I am a consultant. So I'm an entrepreneur in that sense that I'm a consultant and I work for myself. And what I do is I'm an educational consultant. And then you lose people, you know, because then people are like, what does that mean? Mm-hmm. So I talk to people about setting up a business, but that's just like one area that I talk to people about, because what I really am is a teacher. So I am a teacher and I've taught all levels, from teaching internationally to domestically, everything from kindergarten through till high school. I've worked in development education, you know, on the continent of Africa and Asia and Europe. And so I've ventured into lots of different forms of education, teaching and learning, and I see it everywhere. So teaching and learning is everywhere. If someone is like, oh, how did you start a business? I'm like, oh, okay, here's an opportunity to teach and learn and have an educational experience with someone around that. So, and then I see the system. So I see how all these different things connect, right? And
yeah, you really do.
Mm. Well, I guess that's really, and that's the thing that kind of encompasses all the different clients that I work with, because I do such different things for each of the different people that I work with. But ultimately, it's about helping people see what they can't see, and then helping them by teaching them how to account for those things in the work that they're doing. So there's elements of teaching and learning. There's elements of systems design, experience design, which typically people think of as in the digital space, like designing a user interface for a computer program or something. But ultimately, everything is an experience, right? A yoga class is an experience. A dinner party is an experience. And those experiences have different components. And as an educator, what you learn, when I went through school, and I think I've always kind of had it, this lens of looking at the world, because I had a very big family. I was always watching, and I was the youngest. And so I was always watching and observing all the different moving parts of how things were working. In education, you're taught very specifically to do that in the sense of a student. So you look at a student and you look at how that student operates in the world. How do they look? How do they see? How do they touch? How do they feel? How are they making sense of the world around them? So generally, all the different degrees, there are a few of them, they call me a cognitive social scientist, Lisa. And a cognitive social scientist is someone who understands how people make sense of the world in their brains. And so I help people organize their environments and their experiences to help people easily make sense of them.
So what, you've had to have a lot of education for this,
right? My business education was following my father around, you know. Well, he would drag you around, because, you know, he'd say he'd want to take you to go do something, but ultimately he just took you to do work. And so you would have to follow him around while he was going and working and talking to people. And he ran rental properties in Vancouver and a wholesale lumber business, and, you know, never wore a suit a day in his life, but I got the most expensive business education from that man. And I have an undergraduate degree in sociology and political science and development cognition. So brain in infants and how infants start to make connections. Sociology is like how people, society, right, works. So I got fascinated by psychology, and you always hear me talk about psychology and those influences. And then a master's in teaching and learning and educational science. So the actual specifics of teaching and learning and what that does in the good old adult brain. And then last but not least, the PhD in technology specifically, because everyone was like, oh, technology's bad. But I don't like statements like that, absolutes. So I did a degree on how to use technology to build community, because I think it's a tool. And, you know, if we're the smart ones, right? The machines, I think a human is much smarter than a machine. I'm sure there are lots of different people who are on podcasts talking right now who would disagree or want to engage in a conversation about that. But the skills that make us innately human are things that I work on in my business. You know, these kinds of basic humanity skills and make us incredibly intelligent if we know how to use them. So I just looked at a machine, looked at digital technologies that way and how we can make use of them. And look now, like look in this, we are currently, depending on when you're listening to this podcast, we are probably like month five in the North American Corona lockdown, month three, mm-hmm. month four or five.
I think it's four, yeah. Yeah.
And look at the role technology has played to foster connection. All these people who have not been able to see people. I'm in quarantine, right? Like, I've been able to talk to all the people that matter to me and connect with them, see their faces. I've listened to music. I've, you know, been able to distract myself with the Netflix. Not too much Netflix, people. Keep it in check. But you know, technology is what we're doing right now. We're in different parts of the world. So, you know, there's a lot of good that can come of the use of technology. So I studied that for the last one. Last one, no more.
Wow, that's a lot, Michelle.
I like learning. I'm in education. You know what I'm going to say? I'm like a sucker for a good education. You are. Look at you. If you listed off, Lisa, the amount of trainings and programs that you've done. You know what? I bet you beat me even just with this last calendar year if we talked about the trainings you've taken. All right? So from one addict to another.
But that's what I love about learning is it's never ending. And you can learn things from other people and you can connect the dots. Like you saw how technology could relate to community. Mm. I mean, it's amazing, actually. And I love this where you say you see where things can connect, because truly someone could just say, here's what I want, not make any sense whatsoever, but you listen. Like you listen to the words, you watch the face, you kind of watch the body language, and you're able to tell what it is that they really want. And then you like literally in a second, just put it all down on paper. You're like, here's what you mean, right? And if not, just correct me. But you will literally put it down in statements and organize it for the person's mind. Is that?
Yeah. I mean, yes, I, you make it sound like such a superpower. That's very cool. It
really is.
And I think I want to make sure all of my family members get a copy of this podcast so they can hear you say, I'm a good listener. That's really good. But yeah, I feel like, well, my history of mindfulness, or I have a lot of energy. I have a lot of different things that that I've grown up with, certain tendencies around OCD. Like I have a very busy brain, and I think yoga and mindfulness helped me to zone in and focus for self-development purposes to lead a happier life. And professionally, the repercussion of that is a keen sense of observation, but that's something that anyone can cultivate. You know, like there are predispositions, but there are very tangible. See, now I go into teacher mode and I'm like, see, there are lots of different ways you can learn how to notice and observe and pay attention like that.
But I don't know if everyone wants to have that keen of a sense of observation. I don't know if that's something.
Yeah, it's It's a lot of stimulus to absorb, but that's and I do. That's where my energy, I think, and as a teacher, that's why it's so beneficial as a teacher. When you're in a room, teachers learn to be in chaos and to make sense of chaos. You can't ask a classroom of sometimes 36-year-olds to just be quiet for a sec so you can think. Like that's not something that happens in a classroom, right? So you learn, your brain learns to adapt and be agile with that thinking process. So adults and sitting and listening to people and, you know, you're a perfect example of a subject matter expert, Lisa. Like when I first talked to you about you, Ohana, the studio, you know, you're a perfect example. Like people aren't their minds aren't as chaotic as they think they are. Like I'm listening to you, but you are actually making a lot of sense. And a lot of things that you're saying do connect. It's just, you're so close to it. You're so close to your content. That's curriculum and education speak, right? The what that you teach, the what that you want to put out into the world. Even if you don't consider yourself a teacher, the what you want to put out in the world. If you're, you know, an artist or an engineer or, you know, whatever your gift and the thing that you are a subject matter expert in, that is what I can see the dots more clearly than you, because you're just closer to the dots, right? It's like getting that additional perspective to be able to see them more clearly. Yeah. People's brains are not as messy as they think they are. They start talking to me you see all the different tangents that your brain has taken you on for the last few months or years, you know? And all I see is sets of ideas. And then my brain is like, okay, that idea links to that idea. Maybe that idea should come first because that's a bit harder of an idea. And then the triaging and prioritizing starts to come into place. But yes, the structuring of the chaos is something my brain my brain has done, I think, since I was a child, and then it was enhanced as an educator.
Triaging. See, you're a wordsmith as well. Like, you'll come up with any unique way to say the same thing.
But again, that's teaching, right? You know, yeah. This. You cue, when you cue something, and if you cue something in a movement class and you don't see anybody move, like if you say, oh, this is a neutral spine or whatever, and nobody moves because people, maybe they don't understand what a neutral spine is, then you say something like, you know, don't curl your butt, don't stick it out, have it somewhere in the middle between those two points, right? Mm-hmm, because people understand that term. Yeah, and that is definitely, besides the fact that I love words and I love reading and I've always read a lot, that's teaching will get you there real quick, because you know you're saying something and you have like 20 blank faces staring back at you and you're like,
I better change this. Yeah, exactly. So do you think that because life is so hard and people do check out mentally quite a bit, having this keen sense of observation is why they don't want to really pick up on all these cues, because they really can't function in their own kind of realm, especially with what's going on right now in the world?
Yeah. Well, there's the sensory element of it, and then there's a structuring element of it, right? So some people find the sensory element overwhelming and opt out. And even, you know, I did the video I just posted yesterday on social media is just kind of about, you know, people don't ask themselves big questions even, you know, in this moment in time, everyone's trying to figure out like people's jobs. Like, I don't even know what the number is, but like 30% or something, let's just pretend it's something like that. It's like 30% unemployment. There are a lot of jobs that aren't going to exist anymore. There are a lot of jobs that aren't going to exist in the same fashion or form as they existed before this moment in history. So people are trying to redefine themselves, and you know, and I'm asking myself that question too, you know, like, who are you and like, what do you want out of life? But a lot of people will avoid that question because A, it's just too overwhelming to think about all the different things that they want, can't make a decision, or B, they don't know once that process gets going and stuff starts coming up for them, how to organize those ideas in a way that doesn't become overwhelming so that they can actually use that material and make informed decisions from the insights that they're getting, right? Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's tools and strategies and practical things that as an educator, I want to be a part of helping equip people with.
Mm. So I have followed this yoga called Ketone Yoga for a little bit, and she really talks about organizing your environment. Mm. And a lot, like your wrists are representative of your neck. And so if your wrists don't work, your neck is not going to work really well.
Oh, your body environment.
Yeah. So like organize your, she would call it your house, organize your house so that it's clean, it's neat, it's aired out, right? Your lungs. So I love that you use that organized environment piece.
Yes. You've mentioned her before to me. That's such a good analogy. Yes. Mm. Mm. Yeah. And that's that. It is. And it's such a cliche, but I'm going to write another book. That's just like, I have a lot of books on the go right now. But one that's called Cliches or Cliches for a Reason, because people say these things and like organization is important, you know, like organization skills. Like I can think back to like receptionist notifications when I was first looking for a job, you know, and they're like, oh, do you have good organizational skills? And
yeah, always. That was always on the application. Yeah.
Right. But the ones that I most highly value in myself and the ones that I think are the most representative of what you're talking about outside of the physical body. So she's talking about organizing your physical body, but what I would be talking about is organizing your mental state and your emotional state. So it mindfulness or awareness, observation has gifted me the ability to look at my, that's like I told you, I started by doing it for myself, like trying to organize my own mental and emotional house and get that in order. And that had professional consequences, but it wasn't because of it was a personal motivation to venture down that rabbit hole of learning for me and being able to, you know, you're a subject matter expert in this stuff, and that idea of distancing yourself from an emotion or a thought in order to be able to examine it for however short amount of time that is as to whether or not it serves you. Mm. And that's, you know, where in professional environments, the kind of stimulus coming at me, brrr, whatever, like I I'm organizing it. Like I'm compartmentalizing it in my brain. Like that doesn't matter. That's those people doing that thing. I'm constantly scanning, you know, in a room, I'm always scanning eyes and bodies and energies and, you know, what's happening for what's the most relevant to what's happening in that moment. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that she talks about the house being organized physically so that it will in turn shift your mental and emotional house.
Yes. So and so I very much agree in the sense of environment, physical environment. Like my house is organized a certain way, people's offices, you know, I talk to, you know, and that's where the system again comes back into play. Like when I talk to people, that's why I do so many different things for so many different people, because people will hire me to do one thing, Lisa, as you well know, and then it pulls a thread.
Right. So we need you for more. Yeah.
Or like, okay, you know, I can think of a large private company. I probably shouldn't say their names on air, but so a very, you know, well-known large accounting company, and they hire me because they want their staff, they want to increase employee engagement. I get a lot of these like increase employee engagement tasks.
Okay? Engagement, like they'll be more productive.
Yes. And typically their definitions of productive are fiscal in nature, right? Like bottom line, they're either going to save money or they're going to make money, but ultimately, but they don't pursue it under that purpose, right? They're like, oh, I just want them to be more empathetic. I want them to collaborate better together. But really they want them to do those things so that they can make more money or save more money. But you start talking to people about collaboration, empathy, getting people to do things like design thinking. And these are excellent ways of iteration and project development and things that I'm familiar with. And, you know, but you start talking to people about skills, okay, like empathy, and then you talk about listening. And then you have to talk about like, how much time do these people have in their day to collaborate? What do the environments that these people are collaborating in look like? How is their office structured? How is their schedule structured? And you start pulling on all these threads. And that's why things are all connected. Nothing exists in isolation. Not one thing in this universe exists in isolation. Everything, everything. A step on the ground requires your foot and the ground. Like everything has a balance to it. Yeah.
You're so deep, Michelle. I know you don't think you are, but you're very, I mean, that whole thought right there is gold.
Okay.
Because that is what gets you far, and that's where you get other people so far. Now, when you talk to these companies, is it that you're talking to the employees or you're talking to the company's kind of planning managers that will then instill this?
Yeah, and that's a really interesting part of the process of change. And I'm not really sure, you know, bottom up, top down. I'm not really sure where I sit in that camp because I think you need both. Like, I talk with a lot of SM, so senior management teams or SET, senior executive teams. So there's executives of the high one, managers of the middle, and then you got frontline staff, right? I work majoritively with training frontline staff, but I over the course of the 10 years of consulting in the private sector, I have moved much more towards the management level and executive level of trainings because I say, you know, I'm so sick of going in and getting people really excited about doing things a different way and working with each other and demonstrating these skills that they've learned. And then the structures in place don't allow for that change to manifest. So you have to go up. You got to go up to the next level. And how are they being managed? How is their performance measured? Like everything I've gotten really into in the education realm, it's called assessment, but in the world of life, it's just called success. Like, how are you defining success? And you're like, let's do it. What's a fun exercise? What's your definition of a successful life for yourself, Lisa?
Me?
Yeah. Like you have a successful life. What does it look like?
Oh, for me, it's happiness.
What does happiness look like?
Happiness looks like everybody is happy and connected in my family. And then we can extend that to others. And then me being able to be happy enough to then serve whoever I can touch.
So happiness is like a fullness of energy, a level of
vitality.
Vitality, which is okay. So there's some physical elements to that and some mental and emotional elements. Maybe for you, even a spiritual element to that.
Yeah, because there's the calmness that brings you the happiness where you, no matter where you are, you're okay.
You know, having just gone up, gone through some ups and downs personally, I really, and this is like, I'm such a masochist for learning. I just love every experience I go through. I really am like, I'm trying to witness it, you know, like witness.
Yeah,
it,
there's so many lessons.
Oh my
every
God.
Experience, there's lessons. Yeah.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm uber tired. You know, like I really am like, come on, universe, you know, you just give me some ignorance is bliss moments. I just would love some of those. But I really do think that success is a combination of happiness, disappointment, mm-hmm. failure, joy. Yeah, like I feel like you need to have all that stuff, you know, in order to have the kind of sustainable happiness that you're talking about, sustainable fulfillment that you're talking about. Happiness isn't the only ingredient in there.
Well, and happiness is fleeting, right? So it's the other side of unhappy. But knowing that either one is fleeting, but you can always find, like, I want to be able to find it quicker each time. And I'm truly happy being content without the fluctuations, like, you know, being neutral, a little bit more neutral in the situations rather than the reactive piece. And that makes me happy.
Yeah. I think that's called peace or balance, you know? And, and like you say, it resonates with me, that idea of finding it quicker and quicker, like all these different things. Like, I think, so just to wrap, you know, that the connection between the work and stuff up, like success in these organizations, when you're going in and you're doing these things, it's so unfortunate that so many times success is only doing things right. You know, like
right.
do things
and
right.
It has
make
to be
money.
A fiscal yeah. piece. Yeah.
And I go in and I'm saying, you know, we need to find a way to value failure. We need to value experimentation. We need to value conflict resolution as much as we value the resolution. We got to value the conflict, you know, like all that stuff. You got to find ways to measure success in a much more all-encompassing, holistic kind of way. But the balance, the thing that I find, and I tell this to students all the time, like I when I was teaching kids, and hopefully at some point, you know, I'll have my own and I'll teach kids again, because there really is like such a lovely innocence to working with children, and having them come to some of these realizations early is really gratifying and satisfying for me. But you know, you try to instill in them that understanding that effort is the goal, process is the goal, like perfection is not the goal. But so often in our society, just as in those organizations, right? Those organizations are not valuing success the way we know success actually looks. And so people are not performing in that way. Our society is just a manifestation of that capitalistic ideal on a greater scale, right? Like we value certain things. And if you don't actually just achieve those standards, then the success is something has to be built inside. It has to be built in your family. You know, the way you're taught in your family to value success, the way you teach yourself to value success as you grow, hopefully into a well-adjusted adult. But it never ends. So this is the thing I say to students, like it never ends. Like I struggled with an eating disorder, but they say, you know, you never say you're completely over it. But I, you know, when I was a child, and they always used to say, like, those voices don't go away. Like, I feel like so often people in the world are just striving for this form of perfection that is impossible. And thus they stop the process.
Right. They stop the effort.
Yeah.
To keep going.
Mm-hmm. Because those voices don't go away, but they are not as strong as they used to be. And like we were saying, I can talk to them with much more compassion, and I can make decisions much quicker that, you know, like they don't, those swings or whatever are moments for me to live my value. Like, I don't want to ever live where my life is always working. I say that, you know, I was like, oh, I want ignorance is bliss. But then I say something like this, you know, I don't, if you lose those off kilter moments, those moments where life just really knocks you on your butt, like you'll forget how to get up, and you'll forget that you can get up.
Yeah. People forget that piece that there's only so low you can go. It's going to get back up. It's going to come back up at some point. And then you're going to look back and be like, well, it wasn't as bad.
You have it. You have it inside of yourself.
The strength.
The
yeah.
strength to get up. And when I say that inside of yourself, I also mean the support network that is involved in that internal process, right? Like you're the one who gets yourself up, but you lean, you talk, you ask for reminders of love and all the stuff that you need to do to gather up all that strength, and then you get up again. And you're like,
and that's why you need community. That's where the community piece comes in. It has to be part of an individual, but we have to do the work individually. You know, I do notice that with students is that when you follow their path and trajectory, and whether it be physically or their whole path through the yoga journey, you do see that I could take away their pain. And this could be mental pain, emotional pain, physical pain, but there's some part of the process that they have to go through themselves. And you see that if they do put in that effort that you're talking about, they do want to put in the work, you lead them, they put that in, and then the reward for them is just so much stronger than avoiding it altogether or trying to take it away from them altogether.
Mm-hmm. And again, more cliches, right? You can lead a horse to water, but you can't make it drink. And this word is resilience, and it's everywhere nowadays, and it's going to become even more profound and powerful as we move through, come out of this current moment and into whatever the new reality is going to look like. It's going to require a heck of a lot of individual and community-based resilience, and it's that classic story of, you know, I was raised by two immigrant parents, and they were both instilled, one Eastern European and one South Asian, both very very strong work ethics. And they were reminders as a young child that, you know, we're here, we love you, we're going to feed you, you got a roof, you don't have to worry about that stuff. But school, your work, your life, your sibling relationships, you guys got to sort this stuff out. Like, we're not here to just make your life easy. We're here to support you. But supporting you isn't making your life easy. Support is supporting you through the difficult times that you're experiencing. And I think,
well, it's tough love and holding space.
Yeah. And that's one of the deficits in, you know, technology is causing a lot of issues in our society, and entitlement is causing a lot of issues in our society. There is a generation of people, probably across generations, actually, it's not just one generation, but lots of different people who have been raised under a flag of entitlement. The world is very convenient. I get things when I want to get them. And that's just simply not the actual reality of human nature. And when human society as it is now being tested to these levels, we're coming face to face again with the need for us to be, as individuals and as communities, more resilient to difficult times.
Mm. So can we go back to the educational piece? So why would you think it's important for somebody to have an educational framework with either, I mean, everything's online right now, right? So schools, three of my kids, three different schools, all of them are online, right? And each school did it differently. I had to do quite a bit online. Many businesses are going online. Do you think, so number one, kind of the framework piece, do they have to now re-engineer because we're online? And do you see more jobs going back to, like, for example, Toronto, and I have Boston, you know, nearby, where there's tons of traffic to get into the city. Do you think that's going to go back to that?
Mm. Well, let's pull on the online education thread for a minute. Okay. So I'm part of a research group at York University that's been looking at online education for the last 5 years and looking at how to leverage technology for good and to help us actually bring more effective teaching and learning practices to the fore. So just as many systems are being highlighted, justice, you know, politics, systems are broken or breaking, education has been broken for a very long time. And there are, the way that we teach and learn right now, just in a nutshell, is industrial. It was made to produce people for assembly lines. And so there is no good that can come of taking that same model of education and transitioning it on into an online environment. And that's what's happening in a lot of different schools right now. So there is an opportunity, and there are places in the world, and I've been consulting with different secondary and elementary and tertiary schools on their transition to online learning. And it is an opportunity. I really think that this is a wonderful opportunity where now I don't need to argue with people that technology can be good, because people are like, oh, we've used it. Like, yeah, this isn't bad. So now I don't need to fight.
We've had to learn fast.
Yeah, because it was usually a huge hurdle where people were like, ooh, technology, evil, bad. And so now I'm like, listen, we can use it for good. Okay, good, that's done. Now we can start actually doing things like in education, is things like experiential education. So the way basically people used to learn before schools were invented, how did they learn things? How did you learn things from your mom? How did you learn things from your grandparents? You know, you went, how did I learn things from my dad? I followed him around. I was in an experience. He would talk to me about what, I would ask questions about what just happened. He would explain to me how that relationship works and what he was buying and what he was selling and how, why he did it that way. And it was an experience. And I learned because it mattered to me. And we have lost sense of creating. Our brains are very, very simple machines, very complex, but at the same time, very simple machines. If you are emotionally invested in something, as we all know, when emotion gets in the game, things get heightened. The neurotransmitters, the stuff that gets released in our brains when we are emotional about something, tag it as important. So in experiential education, we give people opportunities to experience information in a way that is more meaningful to them. Get that emotional tag, boom, all of a sudden they remember it better, they can recall and retain it better. Awesome. Assessment, totally changed the way we're, why are we testing people like this? Quizzes and exams that are just about things they find in a book. Google can do that stuff now, okay? We don't test people on what we call content knowledge. We should be testing people on skills, on an ability to use information in context. So I have, and then another, the last one is, so the three pillars of education are what you teach, curriculum, how you teach, pedagogy, why you teach, measuring success, assessment, okay? So the why you teach, measuring success, measure skills. The how you teach, the pedagogy, it should be experience-based. And curriculum, the what you teach, should be modular. All that means is you as Lisa and me as Michelle might want to enter into English from a different way. You might want to start with To Kill a Mockingbird. I might want to start with Sherlock Holmes. Like, why do I have to do the same thing that someone else is doing when I want to be doing something different? So there are opportunities to modularize curriculum, the what you teach, that people can enter those, that information in different ways and at their own pace and when is meaningful to them. So these are kind of the changes that need to happen in education, are happening a lot in different places. But the shift to online learning that you're talking about, unfortunately, there's a lot of those traditional old school models, literally old school models of teaching and learning that are really hard for me to see people engaging in this time, in this digital age. And you know, like no thinking, clicking, reading, like, so you're, there's a lot of people, I don't know if you're experiencing this with your children, Lisa, but have you seen some of the pros and the cons, some things that teachers are doing that are like, oh, that's really cool, my kid really liked that and that worked. And other things where your kid's like, that was so boring.
Well, I have to say that the older two are both juniors and two different schools, and they were very hands-off. It was just like, here's your assignments. Maybe we'll meet once a week, once a month, not very hands-on. Whereas my youngest, seventh grade, it was like he was in the classroom every single day, every single period. So it was like he was just sitting in his room. And that worked for him. He went from having certain grades to them all being raised through that type of learning environment for him. Because after each class, it was like, go run, have a snack, go run outside, play, come back. So for that, it worked really well for him. The other two, you know, my daughter just is self-motivated, so it worked well for her, and my son is not. And so for, as a junior in high school, without that, they didn't really, that school didn't have a good, it was a public school and just didn't really translate it very well to the students. I think they were just getting by.
Well, that's the word that I think is integral to what teachers, like teachers right now in so many different areas are called subject matter experts. They're hired because they're really good at what they teach, the what, right? Like the math or the science of it all. And they are often, not in the primary secondary system, but in the tertiary university college system, they're never given any training, like very, very basic training on what it means to teach. And to teach is to motivate, to teach is to engage, to teach is to support, it is to guide, it is to be an assist on the journey of their brains interacting with information and ideas and each other. That interacting with each other is a really critical piece. It's interesting to me that some in this, there's a couple things around education around this that is fascinating. A, the hands-off piece where you just think education is read a book, assimilate that information, take a test, and that's, you've learned. When we all know that 10 years from now, the things that he's learning or she's learning in that junior level classroom is, unless it's relevant to the work that they do later, gone.
Exactly. And having homeschooled for so long, I totally get that, where you did have times where you thought they might not be learning anything, but they were learning something because it was self-directed. What are you interested in? Okay, let's do that.
Mm, yeah. Like I was teaching, I taught in an alternative school for years, and we taught math through to, so, you know, and this is by no means a gendered, and gender is not a binary, but, you know, there were a group of boys in the primary junior group that were really disengaged with math. And I sat them down as a group and I talked to them about what they liked and what they didn't like. And I watched what they did in the playground and how they played. And we built a skateboard ramp and I taught them math, like angles and science and friction. Yeah. Like being a teacher should be really hard for the teacher, but really easy for the student. That's how good teaching and learning is supposed to be. Teachers are supposed to be masters. They're supposed to be experts in this, in these nuances of psychology and subject matter. And they're the ones who are meant to help you in the making of connections, like Socratic methodology, Socrates ages ago, you know, like the art of a good question. Like these are things that teachers don't learn anymore. They're taught, you know, they're taught how to manage a classroom, classroom management and managing, you know, getting kids to sit still and sit in desks is a class that you learn as an educator. And that's, it's fascinating to me, the lack of education in these more agile methodologies. But hopefully it's shifting and hopefully it's changing. Just something to also mention, just to keep in the forefront of people's minds, is the methodology that your youngest son had where it was synchronous. We call synchronous is you're online the same time all the time. I mean, in real time. That is something we have to consider very carefully as we move forward with online education, because that could cause a great deal of inequity between students who don't have access to a computer at specific times or for a whole day for that long. You know, there are a lot of students who need to engage with technology when it works for them. So, you know, setting windows and saying, okay, you don't have to log on for this specific class. The class will be recorded, but by the end of the week, you have to do X, Y, and Z and log on and do X, Y, and Z, which means a student might be able to access a computer at the public library, might be able to share it with their siblings, might be able to get access through a friend. So we need to be careful with synchronicity, things that we do at the exact same time. There are very good uses of synchronous time with online learning, obviously, but we definitely have to take into account these issues of access.
Yeah, and I guess that didn't even occur to me because it's working so well for him. This is like the perfect formula for him schooling, but it wouldn't work for everybody. Yeah. It definitely wouldn't work for everybody.
Pull the threads, right? You're talking about something, you pull another thread.
So let's go over the three pillars, because I know this is really important in yours. So you kind of already did the what, the how, the why, the content, the pedagogy. Is that how you say
pedagogy,
it?
Pedagogy.
And then the why, measuring success. Do you feel like you said enough about those three?
Well, which one do you reckon is the most important, in my opinion?
I think the why.
Yeah, which one do you think is the most important for most other people when they talk to me about what they're teaching and learning?
What?
Yeah.
The what? Yeah.
Everybody always starts with a what. Mm. Everyone's like, I have this thing. I want to. And if you think about it, it's kind of how we approach many of our relationships and our communication style, right? Like think of an argument you have with somebody. You're just trying to get your point across. I want you to hear me. I want you to listen to the what I have to say. What I have to say is so important. But what is the definition of success? Like ultimately, like say you're having an argument about the dishes. Like, don't you want the dishes to get done? Like, isn't that the point? Like success is getting the dishes done. Success is not me having the masturbatory floor and, you know, talking about what it is that I need to make sure you heard. That's more of an ego based thing than it is an actual resolution or solution based thing. Right. Mm. So the same thing translates in education. Like so often we are so concerned that students, like it is incredible what a teacher in the system of public education in Canada, I can speak most clearly to, is expected to get across to engage a student in learning throughout one calendar year. The curriculum documents that a teacher is responsible for are obscene. It's insane what a teacher is supposed to be, you know, and no wonder their result is to organize the system accordingly to get through the what's. Okay, so now I can't assess you on skills. I got to just know, did you get it? Did you learn it? Okay, great, move on. How do I teach it? Forget it. I can't do a fun exercise. We can't build a skateboard ramp. You got to look at your textbook. You got to do questions 10 through 20. Quick. Like the system responds to how you measure success. And in the system currently, success is measured by checking a bunch of curriculum boxes that make no sense. It makes no sense. Mm-hmm. It's like, and also I have a lot of people come to me and talk to me about their kids, and because I do, you know, like I know the developmental markers or whatever for kids, but like brains are unique, like brains are similar, but a human is a unique species. And like working in the alternative system was wonderful. So we had multi-aged grouping. So I would be teaching to a group that could have had a 6-year-old, an 8-year-old, a 9-year-old, a 7-year-old, like whatever. It was based on where, when they were ready, if they were ready to learn to write with pen and paper, to be responsible for certain things, then they're in a certain multi-age grouping. And then we start to tackle some bigger things and have different discussions. The same goes, like, I can't tell you how many parents come to me and it's like, they're not walking yet, Michelle. He's not talking yet. He's so behind. I'm like, what is your measure of success, dudes? Like, you gotta relax.
Well, you know, first-time parents, that's what we think.
Yeah. Well, because so much of our lives, and this goes back to that whole act of noticing and stuff, and by no means, if anyone tells you, unless you're like the Dalai Lama or something, okay, no one has no ego. Like, everyone is managing their ego on a daily basis, and I am no different. I'm continuously managing my ego, and it comes up and shows itself in very interesting, different ways. But that's what all this stuff, we measure success so often by what we want to be valued as, right? Our ego wants to be satiated. It's like, I want to be like, for example, something for me is I want people to like me. Like, that's incredibly important to me.
I'll check a box. That's check easy. Box. Done.
No, but like, so bad. I can't, I'm shifting that, you know, that ego need to be validated as being a good, quote unquote, good person. And just trying to navigate in the sense of like, I'm making good choices. I'm putting, you know, I'm approaching my work with integrity and an open heart, and I'm treating people with compassion. Like, I'm changing my metrics in that sense, because they, you know, they don't serve you. And so often new parents, you see them, and I keep telling them, I give them permission. I'm like, it's okay. Your child is not you. Like, you know, you're so many people are worried that if their child has a special need, quote unquote, special, freaking, I really dislike these terms, but you know, is different in any way, the first thing people want to do is reject that difference and say, well, we don't fit in that box, and there's something wrong with them, which means, oh my God, is there something wrong with me? And then we get angry, and we get agitated, and we react to those situations, and we react to our ego being triggered, and often not with compassion and kindness, Lisa, usually with anger and aggression or something, you know? And so that noticing, that watching, that getting your mental and emotional house in order, I think is a precursor to a lot of the work I want to see happening in education is at the root of the skills that I teach. Like, if people go on, you'll put my website somewhere. If people go onto my website, they'll see the 12 skills that I work with as the basic human skills, which we were innately born with, but have become disconnected with. And an ability to organize your mental and emotional house are the beginnings of some really important other skills that develop from there.
Yeah, and I think we've been disconnected from quite a bit over many generations. And I think that this whole reset of this time that everyone's had at home is going to bring us back to that, to people really, I really believe it. I believe in it.
We're hopeful, optimistic people. I mean, doing work in having perseverance and being resilient requires a great deal of optimism. You know, I call myself a realistic optimist. So by no means am I going to go to the point of burnout, you know, because I think I've been very close to burnout at different points in my life. So it's realistic optimism. So you got to have self-care. You got to have that ability to check in and make sure you're taking care of yourself. And
that's true. It doesn't happen magically. There has to be some, again, back to the beginning, effort, but then this perseverance when the effort gets tough to keep going.
Yeah. And you know, one of my skills, you mentioned this word, is a very important word to me. And I have actually made it a skill in my harmonized intelligence framework, is community. Community is a skill, and that in this moment in time, I really do. I'm very optimistic about our skills of community. Like, I think we're reconnecting right now to what it means to demonstrate that skill and to be a member of community. And hopefully that sticks, because again, it is innate. Like, these are skills that our brain is built for. Our hunter-gatherer brain is built to connect to people and to build communities. And so we just were getting really artificial with that community building in systems online that weren't asking for, you know, our most authentic selves. And hopefully there's some good things that can come from this. I mean, I like we were talking about, again, the ups and downs of life can be viewed through a lens of struggle, which is not incorrect, but struggle as a pain and a difficulty, or struggle as an opportunity.
Mm-hmm. And
this
a lesson.
An opportunity. Yeah, as a lesson. Like, this is an opportunity to do some stuff. And I plan on internalizing. What is that? What's yours? What's an aha for you? Like, we in education, you're like, an aha moment, a light bulb moment.
For life?
For this. Just like you thought, just something that, you know, something that's come to the fore of awareness for you through this corona and, you know, protests and equity and systems change kind of moment that we're having right now.
So honestly, I feel like I've known something like this was going to come, not to this degree, not worldwide. So I've really been preparing. I mean, I spent 2019 preparing quite a bit for something that we were going to have to do in 2020. And so it did not come as a surprise to me. We were going too far from being local. We were becoming too far with people just working too hard. And even like the kids' schedules, just like too much, everything was going to break. And I could see that. Mm-hmm. And so none of that with COVID was an aha moment for me. But what was an aha moment for me was Black Lives Matter. Like that for me, that week was a huge learning piece. And so I'd say that was something I wasn't prepared for and have had a lot of, okay, there's still this brokenness that's happening.
Yeah. And I was just having a G chat with my almost 17-year-old niece in Seattle. And I was asking her, you know, like I was asking her how it felt witnessing it. And so we're South Asian. My father is South Asian. He's Indian. And she is full Indian. I'm half Eastern European. But she's a woman of color. And I just was, you know, very curious as to how she was internalizing that struggle. And, you know, she, a lot of that feeling of discomfort, and I encouraged her to embrace that discomfort and to not, don't shove it under a carpet. Don't put it in the closet. Sit with it and ask yourself what participation looks like. You know, she was like, I know, mm-hmm. I have this feeling like I'm supposed to participate. And I was like, no, participation, it's not this, like, you don't do something because you think you're supposed to do something. You do something because you feel that you want mm-hmm. to do something. There is a calling.
Yeah.
You're compelled to do certain things. And there are, I was, you know, talking to her about in her very community, and she sails and she has a group of friends and she homeschools and she's got, you know, homeschool community, and talking about how in her daily life and how she communicates with her mother and father and her brother and how she carries herself in the world. And, you know, these are not, again, like, think locally, act globally, right? Like I really didn't want, I don't want people who are as myself, I'm reminding myself that the discomfort or the insights I'm gaining in this time, these aha moments, whatever they look like for people, sit with them, hold them, don't let them go until you feel like you've incorporated it. It's sunk into your life. Like there's a value that you have that aligns with, that now there are actions around living that value and having habits that are influenced by the things that we're experiencing right now. It's as simple as that, you know, like mm-hmm. the way that we act, the way that we think, the way that we feel, these are right now, every day, every interaction is an opportunity for us to change and to be more in line with the people that we want to be when these things come up. And education, and I want to be an advocate for education in that sense. So that's the personal sense. And professionally for me, it's in the world of education, everything's been going online. Issues of access and inequality are being highlighted like never before in education. And how do we move forward with this information, living our values of what we want to teach, how we want to teach, and how we want to measure success, the why of it all. Let's not lose what we're learning right now. Let's roll, let's be that rolling stone and gathering all that moss, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
It's heavy. Like, it's hard.
It is heavy. I actually like it.
It
is. There's no doubt about that. That's for sure.
How are you so happy all the time? And I was like, dude, like life is hard. Like, don't get me wrong. Yeah. This is work. This is why they call it work. Like, I wish I don't, you know, so you say that there's, I'm of two minds. Like, of course, when something is difficult, in your brain automatically wants to take the easy way out. Right. I was like, oh, I wish I could be young again and not remember. But you know what? When I was young, I was ill-equipped and I made poor choices.
Absolutely. Yeah. We all were,
you know, like I was in abusive relationships. I had an eating disorder. I was so overwhelmed with the sensory inputs that were coming my way. And now I'm more equipped. And with that comes a level of responsibility to not, you know, I call it Pandora's box. You know, you open Pandora's box and you let it out. You can't close it now. Like, I can't lead a life where I'm not observing and I'm not witnessing myself and others. And that's a gift as much as it is a curse. It's more of a blessing than it is a curse. That's for sure. Because it helps people, apparently. You're saying it's helpful. So I'm glad as a professional and as a person, this work and this struggle, it just makes it so, like I said, it was more for personal well-being, but there have been professional impacts to it. And I am so fulfilled and happy to know that it has positively impacted you. And hopefully I can continue to have that effect on people as a person and as a professional.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love where this kind of went towards the end here. Well, you ask the questions back. I love that. I love that you were like, but Lisa, how do you feel about this? What do you think about this? And you did that with your niece?
Yes.
You know, that's important for her to have to kind of look within, because we don't do that often enough. If we're not meditating, if we're too busy, we're not going to be doing that. So you are the person that pulls that out of them and makes them have to find the words and have to feel the emotions. So good job.
Thanks. And hopefully giving people practical tools, because that's where the educator in me really comes through. So I'm going to keep doing these. People can check me out on social media, because literally that self-awareness piece that you were just talking about and that idea of turning a good question onto yourself is the last one. And I started doing these things like a couple of weeks ago. I really dislike, I sound like I like talking in front of crowds, team, but I really dislike being, I have body dysmorphia. I don't like people looking at me, like, seriously. And people, yoga detour, taking it all the way back to the beginning of this discussion. Cecily Milne was like, you know, you got to just put your face out there and talk to people, because it really is helpful when you talk to people. So I just kind of started making videos willy nilly about whatever I felt like. And then I've really started to hone in on the idea of equipping people with practical tools to do the kinds of things that we're talking about today, seeing connections, going inside, keeping your mental and emotional houses in order. And really it speaks to those 12 skills of harmonized intelligence that I'm trying to promote. So stay tuned and let me know if there's any specific things that you are working on, anyone in your audience is working on, and I'm happy to keep the conversation going.
Yeah, we love it. You're so high energy. I'm so high energy. I wasn't sure how this was going to go. This flew.
We did it. I can't believe it's been an hour. We're so good.
It did fly. But I just want to thank you for taking time out. I know you have jet lag and everything. So I really appreciate you being here today to do this.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for wanting to have a conversation and putting so much good energy and work out into the world for people to work in on their own development. And like I say, you are a person who is always living that mantra of lifelong learning. So I look forward to seeing you in the M3 group in July.
Yeah, I'll see you soon.
Yeah, absolutely.
Bye.
Thank you for listening. Michelle and I had such a good time with this talk. We are so, so high energy, and we had to really contain ourselves to get this within an hour. So I appreciate the time that you took to listen to this. I hope that you got something out of it. And if you're looking for what Ohana is up to next, we are offering our next Ohana Yoga training in September of 2020. There will be parts of it that will be online, and there will be parts of it in-house. There will be more information coming forward, so please do continue to check our website at ohanayoganh.com, as well as all of our classes where we have in-house and online currently until December. Thank you so much. I love you all.